democracy isn't a spectator sport. America isn't about, yes, he will. It's about, yes, we can.
We do not scare easily. No, we endure, we overcome, and we always, always, always move forward.
Believe me, it's going to be great. Believe me. We're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Believe me. We're going to destroy ISIS so fast. Believe me. There's nothing suspicious in my tax returns. Believe me.
Don't boo. Vote.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09. Today is Thursday. It's July 28, 2015. One more day until the weekend. One more day left of the Democratic National Convention as well. You heard the bumper sticker there from Tim Kaine. Don't boo. Vote. That will surely end up on a bumper sticker before the end of the campaign season. We know that for sure. Coming up on the program later, we'll talk about the importance of social media with the political campaigns as we move into the home stretch of the race for president, the race for the White House, here on 720 WGN on The Opening Bell. But first, let's get to the WGN market desk. You heard Vic with some of the numbers there. I'll give you some of the what is behind those numbers now this morning. Asian stock benchmarks mostly lower. Investors digested an upbeat Fed assessment of the economy that raised the prospect of further rate hikes while anticipating more stimulus from Japan. Japan's benchmark Nikkei lost about 1% overnight. Also, South Korea's indices slipped as well. The Hong Kong Hang Seng dipped about 0.5%. The Shanghai Composite there dipped about 0.2%. Major U.S. benchmarks ended with little change yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrials fell just about less than 0.1%. The Standard & Poor's lost a little bit as well. The NASDAQ rose just a little bit. The day ahead, what could drive the markets today? The Labor Department reports the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Also, Freddie Mac reports on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. There's another round of corporate reports due today, earnings reports. Ford Motor Company will report its quarterly financial results before the market opens today. Amazon and Alphabet Incorporated, the former Google, will report earnings after the bell. Facebook handily surpassed Wall Street's estimates with their second quarter earnings, barreling ahead on mobile advertisements, user growth, and the next frontier, video. People are spending more time each day on Facebook, and the company's focus on video is attracting more attention from users. The company has been working to get users to create and watch more videos from each other, from businesses, and from celebrities. It appears to be working. Facebook had 1.71 billion monthly users as of June 30th. Up 15% from this time last year. Also, Whole Foods said quarterly sales at established locations fell for the fourth quarter, straight quarter, as it fights to distinguish itself from competitors that are also offering organic and natural foods. The Austin, Texas-based company said yesterday the figure was down 2.6% from 3 months earlier. Also, the number of customer visits has declined as well. CEO Walter Robb noted that the most recent decline marked an improvement from the previous quarter when the figure fell 3%. Well, let's get right to our morning business discussion this morning, an update on the Tesla case. We've been following this, of course, with Dale Buss, who writes for Forbes and Brand Channel, and he was one of the first to bring us information on this. Dale is with us this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Dale.
Morning, Steve.
Consumer Reports has joined the call for Tesla to stop beta testing, I think, on this, to disable certain parts of the autopilot on the car. Elon Musk has fought this. He's said no. Is there any movement on I know he was sending out an update, too, on this autopilot. What is the latest on this investigation? Where is it going?
Well, the investigation by the federal government in terms of the death of this driver in Florida is ongoing. They haven't really said, you know, where they're headed with it or necessarily when it'll be concluded. But Elon Musk and Tesla are trying to move forward and kind of away from all this controversy over autopilot. You mentioned Consumer Reports, and it was interesting that last week they called for Tesla to disable autopilot for now until everything gets figured out. Because Consumer Reports' blessing of the quality of Tesla vehicles has been one of the most important, you know, third-party endorsements of what Elon Musk is doing with Tesla. And this publication, which is really well-respected by car buyers around the country, has been a huge fan of Tesla and for the most part. And the fact that they kind of backed away from what Musk wanted to do with Autopilot is very significant. And what Musk himself is trying to do is move away from the controversy over Autopilot, emphasize other things, at the same time that he tries to sort of mop up the problems of Autopilot. So Tesla has broken its relationship with a supplier called Mobileye, which supplies sensors and software, and sort of implying that maybe their technology was to blame for the problem that led to this crash in Florida. The second thing that Musk is doing is he's taking reporters through the so-called Gigafactory in Nevada, where the company is going to be producing more batteries for cars than, you know, the rest of the world combined in a few years. And he's trying to emphasize, you know, how Tesla is moving forward at the same time as trying to be responsible with what it does with Autopilot.
Well, I have a couple of questions on both of these. We'll get into that as our morning conversation continues here with the Dale Bus.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the Federal Reserve did not raise interest rates on Wednesday, saying near-term risks to the economic outlook have diminished. Stocks ended the day mixed following that decision. The Dow finished off less than 2 points. The S&P 500 also fell about two. The Nasdaq saw a 29-point gain. Facebook easily beat Wall Street's expectations for the second quarter, surging on mobile advertisement, user growth, and video. The social media network currently has 1.75 billion monthly users. A new study from creditcards.com finds the number of fees tacked onto credit cards is shrinking as card users compete for business. One of the fastest disappearing fees is the charge for receiving a paper copy of a past statement. And a little over a year after being accused of price gouging, Whole Foods is still struggling to get back on its feet. Profits at the grocer declined 22% from a year ago to $120 million. Whole Foods was seeing double-digit sales growth. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
We're back on The Opening Bell with Dale Buss of Forbes Brand Channel with us talking about Tesla this morning. Dale, before the break, we were kind of giving a snapshot of where Tesla stands. I saw yesterday a report that the Tesla vehicle involved in the fatal crash may have been speeding. And the question was sort of raised in our meetings here about the show. Well, how is that possible that it could have been speeding if it was on autopilot?
Well, one, we don't know exactly the relationship between the driver and autopilot at that time. I mean, Tesla conceded that it was on autopilot. You know, the guy may have set the car for a certain speed and then used other aspects of autopilot for his drive. You know, it's possible to select some of the features. So it isn't clear yet exactly what happened with this crash. And as much as Elon Musk has tried to say this is sort of a one-off thing and, you know, very rare circumstances, the fact is that autopilot clearly, as he has described it, is still in beta test. And so that means it's not perfect. And this was underscored by the fact that, you know, of the news this week, as I mentioned, that Tesla and Mobileye have decided to part ways. And basically, in some degree, Musk is making this supplier, Mobileye, kind of a scapegoat for what has gone on. And this is a very reputable supplier. And BMW just a couple of weeks ago decided to team up with Mobileye for its own automated driving technology. So, you know, we've heard far from the last about exactly what happened in that crash.
And there was this whole thing about Consumer Reports. What is the danger there for Musk if he's ignoring? Because one of the things that we mentioned before when we were on with you was that Tesla is really the only company beta testing out on the road with the actual people and drivers, and none of the others are really doing that. What's the danger of him sort of thumbing his nose at Consumer Reports on this?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, he is an anomaly in the auto industry, and that has two aspects. It has there's a flip side to what he's doing. I mean, he's clearly the most, one of the biggest thinkers in the industry, one of the biggest visionaries. That's how he's gotten Tesla to this point of becoming, you know, if having produced an electric vehicle is, you know, very desirable, that's how he gets people to listen to his vision of the future. And he's done that in part by sort of openly, you know, flipping off the established auto industry and saying, you guys don't know what you're doing. Here's a better way. Well, as I mentioned, the flip side of that is when your better way puts you out, you know, on a cliff there and it doesn't work, then things can unravel for you. And the position he's in is having the rest of the industry say, we are doing it a certain way. We're not going to beta test. We're going to make sure our self-driving technology is as perfected as possible before we tell our drivers to go out and do it. You know, Musk risks having the whole Tesla edifice crumble a bit beneath him, depending on how he handles this. And so far, while he has expressed, you know, regret over this accident, and he said Tesla is getting to the bottom of it, you know, he just hasn't backed away from what he's been saying all along, which is that autopilot is basically better already than human drivers. And he's kind of implied that, well, an accident here or there is sort of the cost of progress for the rest of humanity, you know, as they get closer to perfecting autopilot. And it's just not a price that other automotive CEOs are willing to say that society should pay.
And then there's the consumer aspect of this, because if you have consumers watching, they see his response to consumer reports, but then they also kind of get watch the success of some of these tests. Is there an overconfidence or underconfidence, too, that can be seen on the part of consumers as they watch this testing unfold in real time?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the gentleman who unfortunately died in Florida was a huge backer of autopilot and trusted in it implicitly, you know, despite all the warnings that Tesla says that it gives its drivers. He had filmed a video and put it on YouTube of a previous incident in which autopilot had kept him from an accident. So I think there are many people like him who are Tesla buyers and owners who are simply true believers in this picture that Musk is trying to paint. I mean, you got to remember all the components of this. Musk owns a rocket company. He says he's going to go to Mars. He says he might die on Mars. He owns Solar City, which is a maker of solar panels. He was a co-founder of PayPal. He's got a company in California called Hyperloop, which is trying to come up with a high-speed way of using pneumatic tubes, you know, basically those things that give you your cash at the bank when you go through drive-thru. Yeah, a big version of that to speed transport on the ground. So this is a man that, you know, seems to be above all that and ahead of his time in so many different ways. And a lot of tech aficionados say, if this guy says autopilot is perfect now, you know, I'm with him. Okay, I'm going to follow him, and he knows what he's talking about despite the warnings. So, yeah, it is a big danger.
And then we have the Gigafactory that's coming online that you mentioned earlier, where they're going to be making all these batteries. Is that going to help him push production of some of these vehicles that have yet to be produced?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his vision, again, for the Gigafactory, which is very real and is being built in Nevada, out in the desert there by Reno, is that it will drastically cut the cost of making batteries for electric vehicles, and it will do that through automation, through efficiencies, just by doing everything better and faster. The big bet that Musk is making now is he wants to accelerate production of batteries at the Gigafactory, get it done a lot faster than he was planning, so that he can supply about 500,000 vehicles by 2018, and most of these vehicles would be the Tesla Model 3, which is the lower cost vehicle he previewed a couple of years ago. The thing about it is that Musk is now saying that he's going to accelerate his timetable by a couple of years and get to the point of producing this 500,000 vehicles in 2018. He's never met a deadline ever that he's set for himself, and he jokes about it. And this is one of the factors that kind of, you know, is a problem with the Tesla stock, because investors just don't know what to believe. So really, this will be the biggest miracle of all. And his biggest accomplishment, if Musk can actually get the Gigafactory done faster than he said and produce 500,000 vehicles a year by 2018, fulfilling a promise, really, to investors for the first time.
Well, it's got a cool name, regardless of what else happens. Gigafactory is a pretty cool name.
Yeah, he's good at that.
All right. Dale Buss, thank you for the conversation this morning. Dale D. Buss on Twitter. You can follow his stories on Brand Channel Forbes as well. Thanks for being with us today.
You bet, Steve.
ABC News. Tech Trends. Tracking voter interests in real time. Live from the national political conventions. In the age of smartphones and tablets, voters are more plugged into the election than ever before. And we're getting a glimpse into the interests and concerns of voters in real time by looking at their Google searches. Danielle Bowers is a Google Trend expert.
Looking for searches around the conventions, the candidates, the issues, looking at questions and comparing things and really just trying to find interesting nuggets.
So what were the top searches during Donald Trump's speech?
We saw a 15,000% spike in LGBTQ. So really trying to understand what was behind that.
As for the most searched issues,
we actually saw police as the number one searched issue. And this week we saw abortion at the top of the list.
And when Google compared interest in this election compared to 2012,
showing a 323% spike compared to this time last cycle.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the program. This is a year for social media and campaigns for sure. It was a year that both of the presidential candidates announced their vice presidential picks on Twitter. That's the first time that's happened in history. Let's talk about this this morning as our conversation continues on The Opening Bell. Senior writer and tech expert Maggie Reardon. In Philadelphia this week for the Democratic National Convention, with us on The Opening Bell. Maggie, good morning. Welcome to the Bell. This has been an historic year for social media and the candidates. As I mentioned, both of the candidates announced their vice presidential picks on Twitter. Are we going to see more history making from these candidates with social media?
Yeah, I mean, social media has just been sort of the main tool for these campaigns, especially reaching out to millennials and using all different kinds of platforms. So, I don't know if they're going to be sort of making history, but they're certainly going to be making history in the sense that this is going to be one of the main ways that they're getting their message out for the rest of the campaign.
Give us a sense of how important social media is for political campaigns these days.
Well, it's really one of the key tools. I mean, if you think about Facebook, for example, I think I saw a statistic that more than 80% of the people who are online are on Facebook. So that has a tremendous reach. And really what these platforms are really great for is they're able to target people directly and get the message directly to individuals. And it's different because the message is able to be tailored right to somebody's needs. So, if somebody has sort of engaged with the Hillary campaign previously, maybe they'll start seeing some ads about donating or something that's targeted directly to them. So that ad may look different for one person, and their neighbor could be seeing something completely different.
This is an area where in the past candidates have had to pay money to do this sort of connection with the voters, with advertisements and other things. Are the campaigns saving money because of this, and are they making money because of this? Are they also doing fundraising on social media?
Yes, they're using it for fundraising now. Do I think that this is really saving the money? No. I mean, they're still spending a lot of money on traditional media, and that's not going away. But I think this is really where the future is. And again, the value is really in being able to target their voters. And that has really worked. You look at the Bernie Sanders campaign, social media was a huge part of that. That's how he was able to raise so much money from individuals and also mobilize these people and get them passionate. And, you see that at the convention. I had one Bernie supporter tell me, he taught us how to use social media and we're going to keep using it to stay organized and to get our message out. So there's real value in that, but at the same time, the traditional mass media is not completely gone either. I mean, the show last night was really that was for mass media, right? I mean, all the networks were there, all the cable channels, and sort of the spectacle of these campaigns is really still for that television experience.
Is it becoming any more two-way, this social media connection? I hear from a lot of people that they would like more opportunities to connect with the politicians they're following on social media. That is, ask them questions, have more of these town, sort of like these social media town halls. Are those becoming more frequent or not?
You know, I'm not sure if it's really becoming more frequent, but it certainly is, makes it a lot easier to have that communication. And we see that with everything with social media. I mean, you see that even in the private sector, companies are a lot more responsive to consumers than they've ever been before because there's this direct channel. So I think there's some power to that too. But, you know, I don't know if that's sort of the only reason that people like social media or even the reason that the candidates are using it. I mean, it's also a very powerful tool that people seem to respond better to messages that that their friends are sending out, maybe more so than the mass media. So that's another reason why social media can be so powerful for these campaigns.
So Maggie, here's a question that I had from somebody who I was having this discussion with yesterday about following candidates on social media. Before they did it, they wanted to know what they could expect to get. That is, are they going to be bombarded with nothing but a post from their people they're following on social media, or are the candidates, do they have some sort of map that they're following, and are they being really sort of careful about doing that?
Well, I think it depends on the candidate. You know, you look at Donald Trump and, you know, is he being careful? I mean, I don't think he's being careful in anything that he says. But you look at somebody like Hillary Clinton, and she has a whole team of people that are tweeting and using Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and all these other platforms for her. And, you know, I think those posts are probably a little more calculated. You know, do I feel bombarded following these candidates? You know, I'm covering a political convention, so I'm sort of feeling bombarded by everybody mm-hmm. with yeah. the news.
Well, what is the danger of all of this electronic communication? We saw the Democratic National Committee email hack with the WikiLeaks dump. There is a danger to be had, not only with email and but also with social media too, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's always sort of a danger to some extent. I mean, I guess, you know, you lose some privacy and in that respect. You know, I'm not sure that it's really, you know, any more dangerous than something like email necessarily.
Because you could put out the wrong 140 characters and realize it a little too late and then try to delete it, I suppose. But that's sort of, it's always there. Donald Trump has tried to do that, I think, a couple of times where he's tried to delete a couple things and it's still been there. A couple of other politicians, too.
I mean, that's the same thing as email. I mean, once it's out there. You can't ever take it back. So, but, you know, if you think of it in the sense of if you're on live TV and you say something ridiculous, it's always there. And certainly Donald Trump is probably, you know, I don't know. I'm not in his head. But, you know, the media has been digging up clips of him because he's been talking to mass media for, you know, 30 years. And, you know, I'm sure there may be some things that he wish he didn't say, you know, in the 80s and 90s.
Is there one candidate that's winning this over the other? I know you mentioned that Hillary has a team of people and Donald is sort of, you know, seemingly doing it by himself. Is there one candidate campaign over the other that's beating the other in social media?
Well, I think it's sort of hard to say at this point. You know, you've got just different approaches here right now. And I think that this is going to be the campaign that experts are going to look at and really start to assess, like, how effective was this, you know, you see that Clinton, for example, is on a whole array of platforms, and she's on newer platforms, and she's got other people doing this for her. She's also doing some of it herself. And then you've got Donald Trump, who apparently is, he really has taken to Twitter, not really as active on other platforms. And, you know, it seems as though he's doing it all himself. Not all of it, but it seems like he's, most of this is coming from his account, from himself. And he's sort of an outlier, I think. You know, he kind of early on said that he wasn't going to be using these platforms as much, whereas I think other Republican candidates were really skilled in using it. But, you know, Donald has an appeal this year for people, and
And we haven't seen him yet with Pokemon Go as we saw Hillary. I mean, she was on that pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Trump campaign is also using Pokemon Go, so I wouldn't. Okay.
All right. Well, CNET senior writer Maggie Reardon, a tech expert there as well, in Philly this week for the Democratic National Convention. We appreciate you being with us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Market Watch this morning, we have from the market desk the numbers. The Dow futures are pointing higher, up about 15 points. The S&P futures pointing higher as well. NASDAQ futures also pointing upward. Let's get the latest on commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, another interesting day in the commodity world yesterday. Soybeans up for the second straight session. There's now worries about moisture in the important month of August. A couple of weather services apparently are taking some of the moisture out of the August forecast, so that came to play. Plus the fact that China, our biggest buyer of soybeans, did buy 131,000 tons of soybeans yesterday. The most active November soybean contract ended the day 12.25 cents higher, 986 a bushel. But the nearby soybean contract got back above $10. The August bean contract, 10.5, up 16.75. Not a good day for pork producers yesterday. Lean hogs at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange down nearly 4% for the day, their biggest daily decline since mid-December of 2015. Much of that because of a sharp drop in the wholesale pork price. The wholesale pork price yesterday morning tumbled $4 from Tuesday, putting it down at $82.50, led mostly by the more than $21 drop in pork belly prices. Apparently, we're not eating quite as much bacon this summer. The county fair season continues. Day number two of the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake. I've had several emails asking if there'll be a rodeo at the Lake County Fair this year, and it will be on Saturday, so make note of that. And have fun at the fair. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you have a great day as well. Listen, I'm trying to do my part, eating as much bacon as possible this summer, but one man can only do so much. As we leave you here on the Opening Bell, a couple of reminders about the day ahead. We're expecting a couple of more earnings later today. We'll see Ford Motor Company report before the market opens, probably within the next half hour or so. The Labor Department reports today on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits. We'll be watching as Freddie Mac reports on average U.S. weekly average U.S. mortgage rates. All coming up, could drive the markets as we move forward. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN with the Steve Cochran Show coming up next. And we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of the Opening Bell. Our show's producer is Mary Sandberg. Co-producer is Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. We'll be back here tomorrow morning.